Okay.
I received this message from Rav Yehuda Mann, who is the current Rosh Beis Medrash Zichron Tov in Toronto, where your son was the Skan, right? Rosh Beis Medrash Mark.
Right.
And to me, it caught the mood, and I said it yesterday between Mincha and Marv when I was substituting with the Rabbanim. And he says, we all know the current news. We woke up Shabbos morning, and we heard about the attack against Iran. And he said, when I think about the fact that this is happening at the same time as the death of Purim, he says, I have, as many of us have, conflicting emotions. He said, first, he says, I want to go back to a Kaddish Baruch Hu's bracha to Avram Avinu when he said the Hey Baracha. The greatest bracha Kaddish Baruch Hu gave Avram Avinu was not just that he would be blessed, but that he would have the capability of becoming blessing. That he and his descendants would be the ones who bring bracha to the entire world. He said, I've seen many videos of the so many Iranian exiles everywhere across the world celebrating the actions of the IDF and the USA. And he says, the actions of the IDF are clearly a Kiddush Hashem. He said, the Jewish nation is reminding the Jews that we Jews are a source of goodness and blessing in the world. When the forces of morality and justice stand up and say, Genug, it's enough cruelty and oppression, and others realize that the nation of Israel is putting its life on the line for this, he says, this is clearly the Hey Bracha. We are trying to bring the greatest blessing to the world. And he says, yes, it can give us pride, etc. But he said, Hey Bracha, look what happened yesterday in Beit Shemesh. Look at the Karbonos. Again, we had to suffer, and that the families had to suffer. The terrible, terrible cost of any war. He said, families, communities can be shattered and are shattered in a moment. He said, yes, we have a chorus of pride in the fact that Medina Yisroel has the ability to stand up and defend its citizens and world Jewry, to stand up courageously against the enemies of God and of Klal Yisroel, who seek the end of Jewish people. But we've got at the same time bear in mind the devastating losses, right? And we've got to feel that pain. He says, we have pride and we have pain. We can feel strong and we can feel the great sadness and shed tears. And he says, this is not something new to our people, unfortunately. And he quotes the following story. He said, on a Purim in the late 40s, at the end, near the end of the Holocaust, Talmid Tzar of Aaron Cutler rejoicing with tremendous intensity. And a student said, I wonder, how could such joy truly change? he had lost almost his entire family in the war. He had endured, all right, exceeding under pain. And Rav Cutler heard this, and he gathered his talmidim together, and he said, when Kriyas Yamsuf occurred, the angels wanted to sing praise for, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the splitting of them. Hashem stopped them.
You've got mail.
And he said to the Malachim, my creatures are drowning in the sea and you want to sing? And they stopped. However, and Bnei Yisroel did sing. Why did the Kaddish Baruch Hu not stop the Jewish people? Aaron said, an angel can only embody one emotion at a time. There's no room for contradictory emotions in a malach. No malach is able to do two missions at once. When an angel sings, he cannot cry. He says, but we human beings were created with capabilities greater than angels. He says, an individual can have two strong emotions, equal and opposite, simultaneously. And Rav Cutler said, so with me, I have deep, deep immeasurable pain over the Churban in Europe and my own personal Churban. But I also know there's Simchas Purim, and I feel that as well. He says, this is our greatness over the angels, the capacity to have to simultaneous. And my man writes, this is where we are today. We feel pride as Medinat Yisroel defends itself and brings oil, brings light and moral clarity to a totally confused world. And we feel with great emotion the anguish for every Kaddish lost, every soldier who is putting their life blind, and tremendous feelings that we got Hashem to give nechama to all the bereaved families. My man's bracha said, may this conflict end swiftly with clear victory, with light overcoming darkness, and may the words of the Megillah be fulfilled here in our day. The Yehudim will have light and happiness. And he says, may we be zeiche this. And I would ask, maybe be zeiche to the end of the Iranian anti-Semites and their proxies, and the Ezra Sashem in this Purim, the end of all anti-Semites. And my friend says, I wish everyone in Klal Yisroel this year a meaningful as well as a hopeful and happy Purim, the Sarot Tovot. And that's what he wrote. And I thought it was a tremendously written piece for where we are today. Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, I took this from a Rosh Sheva yesterday. He says, we're going to read Megillas Esther tonight, tomorrow morning, right? Haman had become the prime minister, and he says to Achashverosh, there are certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among all the peoples in your 127 provinces. Their laws are different from every other nation. They do not observe the king's laws. Therefore, the king shouldn't tolerate their existence. And let me buy them with money so that I may do what I want, and I can basically solve the Jewish problem. Haman's argument is straightforward. Jews are different and alien. They're an obstruction to the way society wants to run. And therefore, they are a terrible threat to your kingdom. They don't fit in with the rest of the human family. They have their own religion, their own commandments, etc. And moreover, they won't eat our food. They won't marry our women, and they don't look for members of our families to be their sons-in-law. You know what they do all year round? They're lazy laggards. Today's Shabbos. Today's Yontif, right? Today's Pesach, Shulis, etc. All they do is loaf. And not only that, they eat and they drink, and they clearly mock your throne, you. If a fly falls into a glass of one of them, he casts away the fly, maybe some of the wine, and drinks the rest. But if you, our great king, were to touch their glass, they would throw it all on the ground. What type of people are they? Who needs them? And Jacobson said, Ilhan Omar didn't invent this lie. She's basically repeating what Haman says, as well as all the other demitards. And he says, this has happened in the past, and he quotes an incident, right? Somebody called Philostratus in Athens or Rome, right? Jews are now you get rid of them. And then he says, let's look at the Megillah. Achashverosh, who the Gemara and Megillah tells us was really no better than Haman and was a massive anti-Semite initially, was more than happy to kill the Jews. They could all be exterminated, right? On one day, right, the 14th of Adar, and it says they made the deal, and it says Amelech Haman went to drink. They were going to celebrate the Holocaust. What happens? Esther, the first lady, walks in, and it's Haman and her husband to a special drink fest, a special party. We know, right, about the, quote, beauty contest, how Esther had become the prize of the harem. And it says the king loved her more than any other. And she won more of his favor and grace than all the other people, women gathered from all across his vast empire. And he put the royal crown on her head. We know when we read the Megillah that this first wine party happens, and the king says to Esther, right? He says, I will give you whatever you want up to half of the kingdom. And Chazal tell us, he was saying, but don't you dare ask for the Beis HaMikdash. And he didn't even know she was Jewish. He had no idea. But he put his reservations in place. You can have up to half, but don't ask that the Jews get their temple back. Yeah. And we know that Esther says the first time, right? Come again the second night, and I'll tell you then. And we know that that's the night that Book of Remembrances is read, and things start turning upside down. The second party, Esther says, when the king makes the same offer, she says, let me be granted to me as my request, my life and my people. For we have been sold to be destroyed, slain and exterminated. Had we only been sold as slaves and servant girls, I would not have made a mess. I would not have said anything. I'd have been quiet. Let me tell you something, our great king. The compensation that Haman gave you, all that gold, can in no way pay for the loss the king will suffer by killing this nation. It says, Esther's making two comments. One is personal and one is economic. She says, my dear king, I'm a Jew. She stands up, right? And says, that's who I am. Esther says that this alone wouldn't be enough to undo the decree. But she says, let's look at what Haman's doing. He's giving you money, and he's taking away from you, right, people of an inestimable worth, doctors, architects, the smart men, the people who could run your treasury, etc. Do you know how much value these people have to you if you put them to proper use for you? The king never dawned on him before that Esther was Jewish, is outraged at Haman. And as we know, when Harvoina says, here's the tree, he says, off with his head, hang him. And Ahasuerus then gives Esther the right to self-defense and to fight against their enemies. The entire climate of his kingdom, Persian kingdom, radically is transformed in favor of the Jews. Mordechai becomes the number two kingdom. And Rabbi Jacobson says, well, why didn't Esther try to answer the accusations? Right? And he says, Haman made an observation to the king that it wasn't, quote, worthwhile to have these pests around. A leader can't tolerate a nation within his own with a superiority complex, with dual loyalties. And if that exists, he knows that's a problem that's got to be taken care of. Why then do Esther's arguments make a difference? You might say that Esther's chen, her charm and grace, were things that changed the king's heart. But we see that Esther didn't rely on that alone. Rather, she presents a logical argument that if you enslave these people, right, you get a much greater return than you do from genocide. She refutes Haman's economic position by saying, right, the cost benefit, the costs outweigh any benefits. Why didn't she say, right, how could you do such a terrible thing? He said, it's clear if you read the Megillah that Ahasuerus was a successful, powerful leader who made sure to protect his position at all costs. That's why Vashti met her fate. She stood up to him. If the king were truly convinced that the Jews were a threat to his empire, right, he wouldn't care what a good wife Esther was. He would have basically let her go with them. So it seems that Esther was using an expanded method, right, of argument. And somebody, Jacobson writes, Ahasuerus stopped and thought. He wasn't drunk at the moment. He knew Esther. She had been with him for 5 years, and he was still enthralled by her. He knew what a great person she was. She had been the choice over a harem, maybe of thousands. And the king never realized that she was anything other than a totally loyal wife. The king suddenly said, she's a representative of these people, and you're going to tell me this is a rotten crew? It's absurd. She basically, she said, I'm the horrific, scary Jew that Haman was telling you about. This is what a Jew is. I am a product of these people. I embody their values and lifestyle. And the king said, this is what I am comfortable with. I trust this 100%. He realized that a Jew was a blessing for society. Someone who stood for moral purity and justice, compassion, and love. He said, I don't have to worry about a people like this. He said, maybe they have certain rules different than ours, but they don't throw it in our face. They don't say we're superior. What is this, you know, turkey someone talking about? And Rabbi Jacobson then says, there's a lesson here for our time. He says, sometimes Jews believe that if we hide our Jewishness, our otherness, we're going to overcome the hatred, the anti-Semitism that pervades. He says, facts tell the opposite. Assimilation and trying to be a guy has never, ever solved anti-Semitism. He says, we can look at today and the seeds of it all the way back to October 7th. The most left-wing assimilated and secular Jews were the same targets as anyone. The same thing that Hitler had done. He says, unfortunately, Jews in Shushan were assimilated. And yet, Haman still wanted to get rid of these guys. Right? He didn't care that they were like him, that they ate the same food, that they probably acted as bad as him. And Rabbi Jacobson says, this has happened over and over. Germany, we know the story. The, quote, integrated Jewish students at Harvard and Columbia, right? We're not talking about the ones who wore kippot, right? They became the punching bag for the anti-Semites. That the solution for Jewish survival is never, ever to deny we're Jewish. We have to stand up like Esther Hamolka, be proud of who we are, and the moral ethic of Torah. Jonathan Sachs, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, would always say, the world respects Jews who respect Judaism. They are embarrassed by Jews who are ashamed thereof and try to hide. And he says, there's one more grand lesson from history. People, right? You get commissions, you get the Jewish Council. How are we going to arrange for the future of Judaism? Well, we'll have another birth program. We'll have dialogue. Baloney. Take a look. The Jewish nation has been around since Avram Avinu. We remain intact. We have vitality. And show life. Ancient Egypt, Assyria, Babel, Persia, Greece, and Rome are in the history books. But who were the Yidden who survived? Any Yidden along the way who swayed from Torah and Mitzvahs, right, and tried to be like the Goyim, they're not here. They don't exist. And a secular Jew who lives that way has never produced offspring. And this is what Megillus Esther and Esther herself taught us. We can try to argue as much as we want. We can talk to the press, such as it is, about science, sociology, decency, etc. But that's not going to solve the problem. We've got to stand up and say, I'm Yisroel Al-Chai. We are the Jews. We, the Dati community, the Frum community, we're the ones, right, who are proudly Jewish. We're the ones who have the tradition of Avram Avinu, right? And we're the ones you want to get rid of? And he says, he doesn't answer how all the Semites will basically shut up or whatever, but he says, there's no other answer. This is the answer HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, and we've got to go with it. And Be'ezras Hashem, we will go with it. And we'll go Mechoyel El Choyel. Medinas Yisroel will go Mechoyel El Choyel. Klal Yisroel will go Mechoyel El Choyel. And yet we'll be able to see, hopefully quickly in our time, the Yeshua that we all need. Okay. Have an amazing Purim. Stay well. We will pick up on Shimshon Purim.
Thank you.